From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Two bands at the center of the Seattle grunge scene in the early 1990s are out with new CDs, Alice in Chains and Pearl Jam. Our reviewer Tom Moon says that almost two decades later, the bands are in very different creative places.
Here are two takes on how to persevere in contemporary rock. Alice in Chains is back after an extended absence with a comeback attempt called Black Gives Way to Blue. There's also Backspacer from Pearl Jam, which is trying to maintain the modern rock dominance that it has enjoyed for nearly two decades. Not too many rock bands have been as steady as Pearl Jam. Every few years, the Seattle five-piece brings out new music. This is its ninth studio album. And like the others, it's built to strict specifications. It's got heavy and heaving rhythms behind semi-tortured vocalist Eddie Vedder. What it doesn't have, apart from that supercharged first single, is much in the way of new inspiration. Backspacer is full of backward glances. The lyrics dwell on long-gone innocence, while the music finds Pearl Jam attempting to rekindle the righteous fury that defined its early works. The effort is audible. It's as though the years of grinding it out on the rock treadmill have brought on a deep fatigue, and the best these guys can do is approximate what they once did well. Then there's Alice in Chains. After the 2002 drug overdose of lead singer Layne Staley, nobody expected to hear from these guys again. But the guitarist, singer, and songwriter Jerry Cantrell continued to write, and with help from new vocalist William Duvall, has created an unexpectedly vibrant expansion of the band's sound. The sludgy, pile-driving backbeats and other Alice in Chains basics are still in place, but there are clues that the band recognizes it can't lean entirely on what worked before. The first song contains the line, "There's no going back to the place we started from." The new record features lush strings, exotic eastern textures, and bracingly lovely vocal harmonies. There's a tribute to the late Layne Staley, with piano from none other than Sir Elton John. Curtains drawn, now it's done. Usually, when a once successful band returns after a long break, it's worried about expectations. That's what's striking about these albums. Pearl Jam is the one that sounds desperate to give fans exactly what they've come to expect, and Alice in Chains sounds positively liberated. They're exploring and stretching in ways that might not have been possible without that long hiatus.
Our critic is Tom Moon. He reviewed the CDs Backspacer from Pearl Jam and Black Gives Way to Blue from Alice in Chains.
Time to change has come and gone.
What's your feeling? From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Carnegie Hall in New York kicks off its season tonight with a new work by the prolific composer John Williams. Williams wrote it specifically for Anne Hobson Pilot. For the past 40 years, she has been the principal harpist for the Boston Symphony Orchestra. She was the first African-American woman to win a seat with the BSO and one of the first in any major symphony. Now she is retiring. Andrea Shea of member station WBUR has the story of the harpist and the music composed for her.
John Williams has written music for androids and aliens. The harp, he says, can transport an audience.
There's something heavenly, or even divine, if you like, about the harp. I think it has a special connection with the other world.
The harp cast its spell on Anne Hobson Pilot when she was 14 years old. It was different, she says, and so was she.
When I was coming up, I was an oddity, I guess you would say, by being an African-American playing the harp, because the harp was certainly not an instrument of people of color. You know, I mean, the angels played the harp and all of that.
Hobson Pilot's harp playing got her into the Cleveland Institute of Music. Then she won a job with the National Symphony Orchestra in Washington, D.C., where she says she was the first and only African-American musician. She caught the attention of the Boston Pops music director in 1969, when she was 25 years old.
Arthur Fiedler came to guest conduct us and said, you know, we have an opening in Boston for the principal of the Pops and second with the BSO, and I like your playing. Would you consider auditioning for the job?
And she won.
Bill Moyer, not that Bill Moyers, remembers when Hobson Pilot joined the BSO. At the time, he played trombone and eventually became personnel manager.
When I joined the orchestra in 1952, there was one other person in the orchestra who was a woman. One. And she was the second harpist. All the rest were men, and there were no people of color.
With Hobson Pilot's retirement, there is now only one full-time African-American musician in the BSO. But Moyer is quick to point out that the orchestra has always used a blind audition process. Musicians are separated from their judges by a screen and chosen based on skill. Hobson Pilot, Moyer says, was hired for no other reason than her beautiful playing.
She has poetry inside of her. What more could you hope for?
It's disappointing to me that the classical music field hasn't opened up more so that there are more African Americans in the field now.
Hobson Pilot has done her part to try to change that. She's mentored public school children in Boston who are interested in stringed instruments. But Hobson Pilot says the harp is difficult to learn. Composer John Williams says it's even harder to write for.
There's seven pedals, and each string can produce three different pitches. It can be a C flat, a C natural, or a C sharp at any given time.
Williams has guest conducted the Boston Symphony for decades and has gotten to know Hobson Pilot's playing, but even he wasn't sure she could pull off the new piece.
I'm surprised that she could. Seems almost like a magic trick to hear and watch her do it.
He's not kidding. Hobson Pilot makes it look easy. Anne Hobson Pilot rehearses the concerto called On Willows and Birches. Sitting on a cushioned stool on stage in Symphony Hall, she embraces her heavy harp with her entire body, her arms stretching as her fingers glide across 47 strings. Hobson Pilot says conjuring this sort of magic for an orchestra the caliber of the BSO is anything but easy.
This orchestra plays perfectly. And, being a part of the orchestra, you have to be perfect. And so for 40 years, trying to be perfect has been a challenge.
Now, with her retirement, Ann Hobson Pilot will be able to relax and enjoy the music from her seat in the audience. For NPR News, I'm Andrea Shea in Boston. Finally this hour, the latest from country music star Miranda Lambert. Her first two albums debuted at number one on the country chart. She's just released her third, called Revolution, and our critic Will Hermes says it's even better than the last two.
Let's get this out of the way first. Miranda Lambert has a thing about firearms, which is maybe understandable for a Texan raised by two private investigators. She had a top 10 hit last year with Gunpowder and Lead, a provocative song about a woman, an abusive man, and a shotgun. And guns figure in two songs on her new record, although only one of them gets fired.
I put a bullet in my radio. Something just hit me funny, I don't know. Just pull the trigger going down the road.
Now, I'm not a gun owner, but I know how she feels there. More seriously, I also understand the song about feeling threatened and vulnerable, which is different from saying I agree with its logic.
Mary says she's worried about herself and her kids. Never known anybody had a gun, and her daddy never did. But I think it should be up to me, because when it's all said and done, somebody's got to walk into the night, and I'm gonna be that one. It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking.
Then there's the song about perpetual dissatisfaction and restlessness. I understand this one, too.
Sometimes I wish I lived on a mountain, drank from a stream instead of a fountain. I'd stay there, top of the world. But I was born a red dirt goo. Unbridled or tethered in time, the safety of the fence or the danger of the ride, I'll always be unsatisfied.
I love the matter-of-fact way she sings, "I'll always be unsatisfied," which is a fine example of how great country, besides twangy hooks and snappy wordplay, often shares confidences, like unguarded bar conversations. Miranda Lambert's latest batch of songs nearly all have that quality, even the simple love songs, or the potentially maudlin one about revisiting a former family home.
Up those stairs, in that little back bedroom, where I did my homework and I learned to play guitar. And I bet you didn't know, under that live oak, my favorite dog is buried in the yard.
Miranda Lambert delivers the songs on Revolution in an impressive variety of arrangements and voices, from quiet acoustic Southern girl confessions to biker chick rock and roll hollering. They're all convincing, and they make up not just her best record, but my standing pick for Country Record of the Year.
The new album from Miranda Lambert is called Revolution. Our reviewer is Will Hermes.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News. Joseph Haydn spent much of his career in service to nobility, away from the musical limelight. The composer told a biographer this, "I was cut off from the world. There was no one within my vicinity to make me unsure of myself or to persecute me, and so I had to become original." Well, Marc-André Hamelin, a pianist, has just released the second album in a series of Haydn sonatas, and our reviewer Tom Manoff says Hamelin has a special ability to reveal Haydn's originality.
The word that comes to mind listening to Marc-Andre Hamelin play Haydn is delight. Many of these sonatas have been neglected by the world's famous pianists because most of them were composed for amateurs, not virtuosos. So, from a technical viewpoint, they're easy. But Haydn's so-called easy piano music was fertile ground for his genius, and in these sonatas, we hear the composer's core musical gifts of melody, harmony, and form. When he was nearing 60, Haydn fell in love with an amateur pianist who admired his music. She was married, however, and also from the nobility, so things stayed platonic. But passion can heat up in music, as in the one sonata he wrote for his unattainable amour. It's always interesting when a pianist of this stature steps outside the virtuosic repertory. The message is that there's something special here, something missed perhaps in music history. And Hamelin's interpretations are unerring in focus, never overplayed to make the music seem more difficult, but never underplayed when the composer's intentions call for some muscle. From lyrical proclamations to high-minded fun, the way Marc-Andre Hamelin plays Haydn makes him one of the foremost interpreters of the composer's piano music today.
The piano sonatas are Haydn's, performed by Marc-Andre Hamelin in his second volume of Haydn sonatas. Our reviewer is Tom Manoff.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.